Then he has part four, a reprint of some questions about festival days in the church year. Rossini was the original author, R-O-S-I-N-I. Part five is a Beatrice line for Kinder, a little prayer book. In the third edition, and here you will notice he didn't hold his nerve like Roy did. In the third edition, Leah has an unhung, an appendix, on learning for memory from youth on. And then, to that, a section on what we would call eisegetics, introduction to the Bible. Now, you know, Roy always wanted to keep those things distinct, and Leah finally succumbed to the idea of putting that Bible instruction in the catechism. Now, let me just quickly go through volumes 2 and 3, because they are part of the overall shape. In volume 2, or part 2, it's really if you have one book or three parts, there's that marvelous essay on holy persons, holy times, and holy ways with holy places. About 60 pages, 70 pages of marvelous material. There's the calendrium, the calendar of feasts. So these people, even though they might not have a pastor coming to them for a whole month, that where they followed the catechism, they would be able to keep pace with the whole community. So that when he came in, he would observe that day, they would be right along with him. Then there's a lectionary for the church year. There's an oratorium, that is the prayer books, the public worship service, and how to participate in Holy Communion, Holy Baptism, how to be a sponsor. And then there is a chronological table. Part three, and I suspect Bob Wiederenders could tell us about this, part three is the Psalter, according to the German translation. That was not done by Leah, it was done by a jurist from Ansbach. And I think that that may be reproduced in that Psalter that we used this morning. All right, let me just comment in some summary way on this Hausschulen church book. The emphasis was that Leah pulled this together in such a way that there could be an instrument for union between the home, the church, and the school. And he says now the following principles are to be used. Number one, the Enchiridion stands at the peak. Learn the text and the prayers verbatim, without any exposition. When this is imprinted on the minds of the learners, then begin the exposition. If somebody can help me on the German word, I don't think it means quite what it sounds like in English. But der Katechismus soll stereotyp werden im Gedächtnis des Kindes für das ganze Leben. A kind of pattern, or a programming, or a stereotype, in the memory of the child, to serve him for the whole life. That's what I call a map.
Pattern.
Good.
What does stereotype
mean? That I can't answer. Second thing, the exposition is in accord with the student's understanding. But learning is better done orally. Orally. From the mouth of the father and mother than it is done by reading. Word exposition is easier for the ear than for the eye. Third, after the text is known, the questions and answers can be used. The questions and answers are aimed alone at showing what a treasure lies in the text of the Enchiridion. Will you remember that phrase? It comes up twice in Roy. The treasure lies in there. He calls it a religious truth that lies in there. But the exposition is simply to dig out what lies in the text. They precede, that is, these questions and answers proceed, rather, exegetically. And for this reason, they include Luther's words in that exposition. Four, this mode of instruction is not the only one, but for so many parents who live in the wilderness of North America, this instruction is given for them in the book. If the questions and answers serve those purposes, the editor and the publisher will be highly pleased. Then, following the knowledge of the catechism, must come grounding in the divine wisdom of God. That's what the Spruchkatechismus is for. It is not a dogmatic text, but it is the use of the scriptures with the catechism material, the catechism as the norma normata, and the scripture as the norma norma, and they are to exercise themselves in testing or measuring. A simple scriptural illustration to show how what is said in the catechism conforms to the scripture. The regula fide, in which the catechism is the fide, and this Spruch catechism regulates. Now, Lehr is willing to let others judge in how far this entire movement of the instruction is of any value. But this is the movement now, from the text to exposition, from exposition to clarification of individual words, from there to the questions and answers, and from these to the book of sayings or the book of Bible verses. This is adequate to the foreword of Luther's small catechism, quote, that masterpiece of catechetical wisdom. Now, this is how Lehr said, with this aim of the care of souls within the context of the congregation, prepared material to join together the church, the home, and the school, and the principles by which he worked in this catechism. Now, I want to give you a very brief run through of some of the Roy material before I settle in on some specifics. Roy's understanding of the catechism is entered, I think, first of all, by that tradition which he received out of Neuen Dettelsau and Lehr, but also by that scholarship in which he so thoroughly engaged himself. And I want to just skim that scholarship for a moment between 1530 and 1845 to let you see how some of the highlights of what Roy saw from the point of view of being that kind of scholar. I think he was also seeing it as being a Lehr-informed man on the way the catechism is to be used. Roy observed in his catechetics, I picked some random comments. You can tell from the Luther's catechism, he says, that the idea was oral instruction. That's why it came out as a set of oral lessons. And there were explanations that quickly grew around Luther's catechism. They abounded. But he points out one from 1580. Kettelbach was the finding. Because it introduces you into and unfolds the treasure of religious truth contained in the verbal content of Luther's catechism. That's the way Roy puts it. And Roy says the institution for teaching out of the Reformation time was the home, that's number one in his list, the schools, and thirdly, the church. Roy says the understanding of the goal for Christian education or Christian teaching in the Reformation was the maturity of and within Christian congregation. That is the goal. And along with the catechism and the Bible and the hymnal becomes a critical tool. In the period 1600 to 1676, there is the confessional conflict as its result in attempting to bring all of the doctrine and all of the conflict or the resolution of the conflict into the catechism as a kind of once-for-all textbook resolving all doctrinal conflict. Roy, like Lehr, saw this as a bad thing for the catechism, not because they were anti-dogmatic or anti the solution of some of these conflicts. He deals a little bit with Spener, and he says Spener is the one who began to discard all of these notes and accretions that begin to gather, barnacle themselves around the catechism. But the problem with Spener, as Roy sees it, is that baptism was denigrated and confirmation exalted. And another flaw which Spener and Franke was that the catechists now acted as if they had to lead the students through the several ways or several steps of the Heilsordnung, a kind of order of salvation through which they must lead them, contrary to the assumption that you start out with them as baptized people. And so many of them, he says, ignored what the catechism taught and taught rather this order of salvation. He deals with rationalism, 1750 to 1830, close to the time of Lehr's catechism. Following items are to be noted. The objective of catechetical instruction was shifted to training useful citizens for this world. The catechisms were not expounded, and they were not, in fact, that decisive anymore as texts. And then he speaks during the period of rationalism of the great step forward in the understanding of the learning process. As somebody noted for us, that Professor Gies, I think, on the first lecture, Roy never got beyond Pestalozzi, but he did add something about Herbart. Now, since 1830, things that pertain now to Lehr. Amid the wreck and ruin, now I'm not quoting Roy, but I'm giving what Roy said. Amid the wreck and ruin, the oaths of rationalism, the old catechism, preserved their hold upon the home and supplied the pious with food. Now, quote, in 1845, Lohr published his excellent catechism. One of the chief merits of this book is that it is free from dogmatical and historical encumbrances. However pressing the temptation may have been to include such material, Lohr refused to yield to it, but rather enunciated the following important principle, colon, an exposition of the catechism is no more than a presentation, according to the rules of exegesis, of the treasures of religious truth contained in Luther's Enchiridion. That's on page 147 of the Catechetics. That is Roy's restatement, the 1931 publication. That is Roy's restatement of Lohr's description of his five steps in the foreword or the preface to his house, school, and church book. Among other things, Roy says, people like Lohr and a number with him, Caspari, for example, and others of that time, now revived the tradition of good catechetical sermons. And simultaneously with this, at the time of Lohr, and part of also of Lohr's contribution, although Roy looks more towards von Hoffmann for certain elements in this, there was an increasing appreciation of biblical history. Luther and Lohr had both said, find your illustrations in biblical history. For Roy observes that for many of them in the middle 19th century, the stories had to be connected now in a, quote, history of salvation narrative. And that because of von Hoffmann's impact. Instruction in the Bible became more common, and again under Lohr, the hymnal, the liturgy, and church history became an integral part of what was learned for memory, what was discussed, and what was studied. When he comments on the catechetical literature among the Lutherans in America, on page 190, Roy says that of Lohr's catechism, that this catechism, which had been composed with a special view to the Lutherans in America, was distributed in America. Since 1904, Roy notes, the Iowa Synod has its own catechism, edited by the author of this textbook on catechetics. It differs, quote, from the other catechisms that were disseminated in America as to content in that it returns to the expository principles of Lohr, 1845, and Petelbach, 1568. So that Roy sees the 1904 Catechism of Iowa different from all of the other catechisms at work in America, in that it returns to the Lohr principle of exposition and usage. Now, some comments and conclusions. For Roy, the catechism is a best summary of faith, which is the life of the mature congregation. And for this reason, pains must be taken not to obliterate the merits of the catechism by our methods of instruction, but we must give them full scope. This will be done best, Roy says, not by going elsewhere or grafting something on, as if we built an explanation on an explanation. But, quote, all of the instruction is nothing more or less than unfolding the fullness of the evangelical life of faith expressed in the words of the catechism. And Lohr particularly reaffirms this principle. He notes in page 317 that Theodor Kafkin and the Iowa Synod, with its synodical catechism, have consistently carried out this principle of Lohr. The principle, he says, excludes some things. It excludes adding special complementary parts to it, like the two tables or other elements. It excludes adding a section on dogmatics and sacred history that transcends the verbal limits of the catechism. It excludes the compulsion that most catechists feel that they've got to expound the nature of the Trinity and the Unity when they get to part two, or that they must go through the person and work of Christ, prophet, priest, and king, and the whole load when they get to part two, article two, or that they must go through the person of the Holy Spirit and the Trinitarian problem when they get to part two, article three, or that before they can teach the Our Father, they must go through a whole doctrine of prayer. All of that is excluded by this simple little principle. Furthermore, it is excluded of turning the chief parts Roy always has five. I will comment on that later. Turning the chief parts into a system. You do not turn them into some overarching system. It excludes building an explanation on an explanation. And now Roy says the catechist is not a dogmatician. He is a sales doctor. He is engaged in caring for souls while he is teaching. Both of them had, then, this understanding of the churchly context and the churchly character of goal setting for catechetical instruction. I find that extremely significant. I think Leah is the root. Roy is the branch. It is also my feeling that Roy, like the rest of us Americans, and especially I can speak better for Missouri, we have continued all of the naughtiness of the problems of the visible and invisible church. And the church that is the real one, the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic one, is this spooky one that you can't see. And the other church that we have to deal with, well, you can sort of manipulate around that. It doesn't really make much difference anyway, as long as you belong to the invisible one. And I think we have paid a dear price, both in understanding of church and understanding of goal of Christian teaching. It's within the congregation that the members, the baptized members, grow and mature. Because the whole congregation is growing and maturing toward the resurrection of the body. En route, we're not finished. I wonder if in the 20th century, and I think this is the issue, I think the problem of the struggle in the Missouri Synod is the problem of the struggle about the character of the church, particularly its apostolicity. It's not a struggle about the Bible. And I think this is a struggle everywhere. In that sense, we are typical. We just happen to be different in the way we fight about it. Second thing, both of them emphasize this understanding that catechesis is an ordinary, everyday, bread-and-butter way of taking care of the souls of the individual and of the members of the congregation. It is an instrument of the care of souls. There is in both of them, I think, and I believe Roy repeats and carries on in some of his own insights, there is that simplicity about the catechization. Namely, the catechization is an exposition of those words, and that's what you work with. And that's how you hook this into biblical materials, and that's how you expand the understanding of the people. I think what was different is that Leah understood and used the sacrament in a way that, in my ignorance, I do not know about Roy. And if there is a flaw, at least in Missouri, about that, is that, for example, as I was growing up, we knew all of the right stuff about the sacrament. We could take the truth of the sacrament and beat the Calvinists in the teeth and beat Rome over the head. But we never got our teeth sunk into the sacrament very often. It was always in the cupboard. Leah was a user of it. The sacrament is for you, not for talking about it. I don't know what the Roy tradition is. I wonder why this just sank into the sand in America. It seems to me that the future of Lutheranism is going to swing on its understanding, use, and confession of the sacrament. Finally, just a couple of other things. I think that Leah's emphasis on the catechism as an instrument of union of home, church, and school, while that is repeated by Roy, does not have the dynamic energy that it does for Leah. Roy's 19:4 edition that I looked at does not have as any of the chief parts the way the head of the family should teach it in a simple manner to his household. That's just gone from the text. And I believe that driving, pulsating thing is missing, certainly missing from Missouri. And I think probably it's also missing from Roy, from Iowa. Leah and Roy both share in what I think is a bad flaw on their teaching of baptism, absolution, and Holy Communion. They have a general sacramental theory or doctrine before they get into the discussion of the sacrament. Two things. I cannot understand how we have so thoroughly lost some of the rich things of our past. Maybe we haven't. Maybe I'm just blind and dumb and insensitive. But it seems to me that we have almost a contempt for our past. Everybody quotes Welker in the Missouri Synod, hardly anybody reads it. Everybody quotes people, and hardly anybody reads it. I don't know whether it's that way among you, but I don't know of great studies on Roy. The most information outside of Lowell's little article that I could find was a piece about that long in the Lutheran Encyclopedia. On Roy. What is it that we don't like about our ancestors? What's the matter? Or are we going to have to wait for our grandsons to fall in love with their grandfathers again? But I'm very curious about that. And to me, that is a matter of the pastoral and sacramental character of the church, because that's the great heritage that we have received. And then the second thing is, I wonder how it is that we have so long avoided the question about the church. It was Missouri's question from the beginning. Are we a church? 135 years later, we've only given the same wrong answer. We keep saying yes, but it's always to the wrong question. And I think that that is everywhere in Lutheranism. At least it seems to me that in the matter of catechism, a critical issue is going to be the understanding of the whole existence of the church with that vitality out of the sacrament, and the character of the life of the church, the life of service, and the life in the world that is shaped by baptism, holy absolution, and holy communion. Thank you very much. You've been most gracious in listening.